This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
This is an appeal for calm. I'm Andy Zaltzman. Please, send in any spare bits of calm that you don't need. With the world in its current agitated state, any calm you can donate will help. Maybe you can spare a nice cup of tea, a 10-minute sit-down with a colouring book and a snoozing dog, don't draw on the dog, or even an old video of Michael Atherton batting stoically for a draw that the UN could project onto the skies above the Middle East. Proper cricket, nature's purest balm. And to do our bit, here is our specially calmed version of the news quiz. Welcome to the news quiz. I am Andy Zaltzman. Just quickly, after the Wi-Fi hack at stations this week that resulted in people logging into station Wi-Fi receiving a bogus warning about a fictitious terror attack, I'm a bit worried that my script might have been hacked and tampered with, but I'll worry about that after I've finished explaining why sport is a waste of time and balding, lapsed Jewish comedians have no place on radio. Hang on. Our teams this week, as the UN meets in New York and with health warnings over vegan dairy products, our teams are Team Give Peace a Chance and Team Give Cheese a Pass. On Team Peace, we have Alice Fraser and Robin Morgan. And on Team Cheese, Ian Smith and contributing editor at Navarra Media, Ash Sarkar. Following more complaints about the imprecise scoring system on the news quiz, I will just be awarding a grade to our teams as we go through the show, and if they're not happy at the end, they can do a resit. Right, we'll start at the Labour conference with our first question, and it's a missing words question, and this can go to Alice and Robin first. Labour leader Keir Starmer, in his first conference speech since becoming Prime Minister, promised that he offered no answers or hope. Are there words missing, and if so, what are they?
There aren't any words missing. That was completely true.
Oh, okay.
And he leaned into the lectern and was like, and you got a problem with that? He's gone really bolshy now. He's very confident. It's the changed Labour Party. It's very, very exciting.
Now, he said there's no easy answers and he couldn't offer false hope.
Correct. Yes.
It's an odd thing. He's made a lot of promises. He said Labour's going to do a crackdown on knife crime, give a real living wage, modern industrial strategy, a 10-year plan for the NHS, devolution for the nation's regions and cities, the biggest levelling up of workers' rights in a generation, more teachers, more neighbourhood police, more operations, rebuilding the public service. And all he asks in exchange is £23,000 worth of cravats as free gifts.
He was on the Tuesday, wasn't he? He was on Tuesday afternoon, and then they left Wes Streeting on the Wednesday in the Glastonbury Legend slot. afternoon. I really enjoyed his speech. I thought it was quite exciting. I enjoyed David Lammy's speech on the Sunday. That was quite nice. He said Britain is back. He said he's been going around the world telling other world leaders that Britain is back, which, given our history... suggesting the empire is back. There was a film about that.
So when he said Britain is back, did you slightly get the sense that around the world everyone just said to each other, nail everything down? Ash, what, as a political writer, what did you make of the whole Labour Congress? Only a few months into their term of office after 14 years in opposition, and yet they seem to be oddly fractious.
Yeah, it was weirdly fractious. I mean, the thing which is really funny about Keir Starmer is that when he's not punching left in his own party, he really doesn't know what to do. So when journalists are saying, hey, like, were those like £20,000 worth of suits, was that really necessary? Did you have to stay in the £18 million penthouse? He's like, I absolutely did, and it's actually quite rude to my children that you would suggest that it wasn't fair and outstanding. And it means that difference that he played on for years, which is I'm not Boris Johnson, is really starting to melt away. And if he turned out tomorrow to have like seven more unidentified children, I'd be like, yeah, that tracks.
Can I say one thing? I've been told online a lot recently that apparently I look like a young Sir Keir Starmer. So if there is a child around, I'm going to get some of those I'm going to get some hand-me-down fleeces, is what I'm going to get.
You could take the Labour government down. If you just said you're one of his illegitimate kids, no one would do a DNA test. Right, yeah, I'll buy that. He's got a new catchphrase, which I think is very clever, because the catchphrase is, change begins. But he hasn't specified when or who is doing it. Just says change at some point will begin. But he's, I think, made it very clear he's not going to be starting that. Or it will go very slowly.
I mean, it was, you know, it was a set-piece speech at a conference, so it's bound to be a bit vague and a bit general. I mean, looking for policy detail in a set-piece speech is a bit like looking for a dolphin in a haystack. That it would be easy to spot if it was there, but it's unrealistic to expect any. Do you think they're starting to make their plans for the country a bit clearer, Ash?
Well, I think that there was always a plan, right? And the plan was phase one, during the election, you say, we're not going to have these kinds of tax rises. Phase two, you get into office and you go, oh, we had a look under the hood and it's so much worse than we thought it was going to be. And then phase three is you've got a budget coming along where it's like, okay, we're going to magic some money out of a hat, maybe change some Bank of England rules, and like, what do you know? Maybe we have to do some tax rises as well. And it was quite obvious from the start, but what's wonderful about British journalism is that you've got this whole layer of very elite, very well-paid journalists whose only job is to comment on current affairs like they've just been kicked in the head by a mule. Like, oh, this is so surprising. Who could have seen this coming? Oh, they're saying it's worse under the hood. Like, oh, now tax rises, what a surprise. And it's like, oh, wow.
Well, that does sort of make sense because Keir Starmer grew up on a donkey farm, didn't he? So that's obviously where the mules were coming from, I think.
That sounds like my dad.
It sounds like you've misheard tool and mule. My dad was a mule maker. Yeah, they very quickly cut the winter fuel allowance. So they lost a vote at the conference whether they approve of the fuel allowance or not. What I didn't realise is how that vote happens. It's a woman asking who's for. Then everyone puts their hands up, and in the space of 2 seconds, she just goes, right, OK, and against, and then the hands up again, yeah, I think that's against. Yeah, it just seems bizarre that we're still doing counting hands.
Right.
I mean, unless you guys think it's good, hands up first. Also, I feel like there's an obvious solution here. So a lot of money was spent on Rwanda, which is very warm. We send the pensioners to Rwanda. All the infrastructure has been set up to send the pensioners to Rwanda, and then we can put people seeking asylum in old people's homes. What? Tell me a negative.
Ian, your plans never have negatives.
Thank you.
Another question on conference for Ash and Ian. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, claimed the government will make Britain the best place to start a what?
I wanted to say fight, but I think it's business.
Well, it could be both, actually, but business is the correct answer, yes. And you know, in terms of kind of trying to rebuild business confidence, you sense that is business behind Labour?
Well, I mean, this is the kind of funny thing about Labour strategy, which is on the one hand, they're like, we really, really need private investment. We need international investment in this country. And on the other hand, they've been spending the last, you know, few months going, Britain's really shit. Like, we're completely up a creek. Like, please don't expect any good things to happen because they won't. So if you're an international investor, you're a bit like, I don't really know if I want to put my money here. So over conference, I think there was a memo that went out, which was like, smile more and sound more upbeat. So during the Chancellor's speech, it was like, I really do believe in Britain. We're capable of great things. Not those things that you want, but different things. Cheaper things.
Look, we've got Gary Neville.
Ian, what do you think Britain is the best place to start? If you had to finish that sentence, Britain is the best place to start. What?
A conga line directly over the White Cliffs of Dover.
Yes, this was indeed party conferences and the annual festival of fixed smiles precisely expressed vagueness and parties taking on their own fiercest rivals, themselves. Starmer has stated his willingness to be unpopular, and to be fair to him, it's very good to see a politician make such a determined effort to live up to a promise for once. So let's move on now to a bit more detail on what was said. A new government bill could require who to snoop into whose what's.
a new government bill could require Keir Starmer to snoop into everybody's wardrobes and pick what he likes the best.
Is this banks can snoop into benefit claimants' bank accounts? Is that correct? In case they are on the take? It's interesting, isn't it? Starmer said he wanted to get more people back to work, and it's already had an effect because one person has. Philip Schofield's back on TV. You cannot keep a good man down.
You've clearly never wrestled against a pope.
How dare you?
In my hometown of Goole, I saw my best bit of benefit fraud. Saw a man on a mobility scooter get an egg thrown at him and then get up off the mobility scooter, run after the kid and punch that kid in the face. That's what happens in Goole. You get to see benefit fraud live. There's a man in Goole who's been claiming benefits as being decapitated, but he's got away with it because he just stuffs his head into his shirt for his passport photo.
Another thing emerging from the Labour conference, the government has said it wants fewer women to do what?
They want fewer women to be an afterthought to men. And speaking of men, aren't men great, Andy? I really feel like there's been loads throughout history. Henry VIII, Henry VII, I could go on.
Fewer women to use exclamation marks in work emails.
Is that a typically feminine trait? I love an exclamation mark.
Maybe that's because you're a new man, so, you know, this is an effeminate quality. But it's definitely that thing of, like, OK, I just, you know, I'd really like it if you paid me the £600 that you owe me, but no worries if not.
Any other suggestions, Alice?
Time?
Yes.
The answer is due time. Yeah. They want fewer women in prisons because apparently not only is it likely to lead to further criminalisation and self-harm, it's also highly unflattering to be in prison. It's not working for women, according to Shabana Mahmood. Everyone from a cool winter to a highly saturated fall colour palette. It's really washed out by a 10 stretch.
So, yeah, this is Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood announcing measures to reduce the number of women in prison on the rather spurious grounds that all the evidence shows that for most women offenders, prison is ineffective, inappropriate, counterproductive, dangerous, damaging and expensive. But apart from that, it works a birthday treat. But, you know, politically, it's always a tricky thing for a government, so.
I think it's always difficult because people have this natural sense of fairness, which is if you've done something wrong, you should be punished. But every time you take someone out of their community and into a prison, it's like you create a tear in the social fabric, right? So more damage happens. If you take a woman into prison, the likelihood is that she's going to be somebody's primary caregiver. Two-thirds of women who are in prison are survivors of domestic violence, and disproportionately their care experienced as well. So the kind of damage that you're creating, it has this ripple-out effect to lots of other people, including children. When you render a child without a primary caregiver, that's a really expensive problem for states. So I think that, yes, this might rub up against people's sense of fairness, but ultimately it's a wise thing. I realise there were no jokes in that, I'm so sorry.
What about if whenever someone commits a crime, they get to nominate one friend or family member to go into prison with them, and that's non-negotiable? So, yeah, you've been chosen to go into prison with Karen. And you don't even have to know them. You pick a celebrity. just to make it so that people aren't by themselves.
Well, that would make sense. And also, you know, obviously, you know, prisons breed crime like Catholic rabbits. So actually, one of the great problems with prisons in terms of reoffending is there are not enough innocent people in jail. If more than 50% of the prison population is innocent, then by sheer force of personality, they will cure everyone else of crime. That's science.
Or also, if lots of people are reoffending, why don't we make less things illegal? So when they come out of prison and do those things, we're like, well, that's not illegal. You can set fire to whatever you want. I feel like I'm suggesting a lot of really good stuff here.
I had a GCSE sociology teacher who said that in all seriousness. And, like, lesson one, module one of, like, crime and punishment. He was like, how would you get rid of crime tomorrow? And this one girl was like, get rid of all the laws, sir. And he was like, bingo.
I mean, I do have a good solution, which is that for all women, in order to stop them sort of costing the prisons money, what you need to do is put them under house arrest, right? And so I suggest you don't even need to give them the ankle bracelet. Just give them a 2.5-year-old. And they will plan to go out in 15 minutes and they will still be at home 4 years from now.
Right. And to merge my idea, it can be... can be a 2.5-year-old of their choice.
Let's move on to the obvious highlight of the conference. This comes in the form of a true or almost true question. Is this true or almost true? Addressing the Middle East crisis, Keir Starmer called for the return of fish fingers.
Almost true.
Correct. Yes, it was almost. What did he actually say?
He said sausages.
Yes.
Which I thought was a profound misunderstanding of both an Islamic culture and a Jewish one.
Yes. I mean, it was a, you know, clearly, I think it was a slip of the, do we think it was a slip of the tongue? Or
no, it was inevitable.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you have a hotel continental breakfast 3 days on the trot. That's too much eggs and bacon. It's too much processed food. It's happened all the time. Liz Truss started going on about pork markets. Keir Starmer has now banged on about sausages. It didn't get reported on, but Wes Streeting finished his speech with, "Give me a dippy egg, I want a dippy egg."
I like that he didn't technically correct himself. He just said hostages afterwards. So he didn't go, sausages, oh, sorry, what am I saying? So it sounded like the start of a list. He basically went, I demand the return of the sausages, hostages, mashed potato. It's very odd.
I thought it was a possessive on the sausages, so it was the hostages of the sausages being held.
Return of the sausages is not my favourite of the trilogy.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, at the end of that round, we're doing a grading system this week. Alice and Robin have A minus, and Ash and Ian have a straight A. Right, now we have a special round looking at what former news quiz hosts are getting up to these days. Some of them have been in the news this week, so each of these questions deals with a former news quiz host, and this comes in the form of a misleading headline. So, Ash and Ian, what is the real story here? Sandy Toksvig marries Bjorn from ABBA, which is a bit of a surprise on various levels.
Is it marries, like, officiate the ceremony?
Yes, there you go. Oh. Sandy Toksvig has officiated the marriage of Bjorn from ABBA. And that makes me hugely excited that I could one day fulfil my dream of marrying off one of Buck's Fizz.
ABBA's Björn Ulvaeus has married his partner Christina Sass in a ceremony that was officiated by Sandy Toksvig, which is the gayest sounding news story to involve a straight couple getting married since Liza Minnelli went to Elizabeth Taylor's 8th wedding on Michael Jackson's Neverland estate.
If I was Sandy Toksvig, I'd have done it as a hologram, see how they like it.
I found out that Bjorn has been married twice before as well, in weddings officiated by Simon Hoggart and Barry Took.
Do you think when they said, I do, the QI siren come on? An obvious answer.
Let's move on to another news quiz host, another misleading headline. Nish Kumar, who hosted the news quiz in early 2020, remains a long-shot outsider to be new leader of the Conservative Party. The man who is current favourite, Robert Jenrick, had a bit of trouble this week trying to define what?
Britishness, yes. I think it is. I mean, OK, well, the one thing he could say about Britishness is that it's been ruined by ethnic minorities and migrants. There's one thing that everyone can agree on, is that we're definitely the worst.
I like how he looked at me as if I was going to go, that's...
He had so much to say in the green room. Where's his shadow?
He's the front runner, isn't he? For the probably going to get the Tory leadership, and obviously he's sort of to the right of the party, which means I guess that side of politics is now sort of a Robert Jenrick, Nigel Farage hostage fest.
I sort of don't understand understand what is England's national identity but a sort of a vague patchwork chorus of 1,000 complaints about the weather in 400 different completely incomprehensible regional dialects working vaguely in harmony towards a brighter future.
Crisp sandwiches. You don't get them in any other country. You know, I look at it and, like, especially the really cheap crisps, which are mostly fat, and you have them in the cheap white bread, and you crunch into it, and a single tear rolls down my eye, and, you know, I can hear Land of Hope and Glory somewhere.
Robert Jenrick's angry about this work wholemeal bread that's coming over here.
Yeah, it's brown.
Yeah. At the end of our news quiz host round, both teams are now on a B+. Let's go across the Atlantic now. Keir Starmer, after leaving the party conference, popped across the pond to New York there as the United Nations issued further trademark resolutions, including please stop and love heart emoji. The USA and France call for 21 days of what to happen and where.
I guess that'll be ceasefire in Lebanon, yes. In the south of Lebanon. So, obviously, there's been an outbreak of hostilities between Israel and Hezbollah. It's been going on for some time with rockets being fired into Israel, displacement of tens of thousands of people, and now there's airstrikes being launched on Beirut and preparations for a ground invasion. I mean, there's nothing funny about it, but you have all the sort of wagging fingers from Washington and Westminster going, oh, Netanyahu, will you please stop? And he's just like, no. I will not. Because, yeah, this sort of threatens to create a big regional conflict, which is very bad for everybody apart from Netanyahu's cabinet because it gives them a stay of execution.
Ian, you've never been Secretary General of the United Nations yet.
Not through want of trying.
That's a personal goal of yours. I mean, any suggestions what the UN might want to do?
Well, they should heed the wise words of Russia, who called for an immediate cessation of hostilities. And I imagine they did that while, like, giggling to themselves. To be like, this is cheeky of us. I think what I'd want to bring up is why the days of a ceasefire are so specific. 21 days. It's a very specific number.
Personally, I'd be more in favour of not a 21-day ceasefire, but a 21-millennium ceasefire, which might be enough time for everyone to calm down. Do you think, is that enough, or do we need a bit more than that?
I reckon on the hour of the end of the 21st millennium, you're going to hear the sound. Chick.
That might be the most depressing thing anyone's said on this. In fact, the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, said a United Security Council can make a tremendous difference for peace. Now, given that the five permanent members of the Security Council are the UK, France, USA, China and Russia, can you tell me something that is about as likely to happen as unity between those five countries?
Someone running the London Marathon but not telling you that they're going to run the London Marathon.
That really puts things in perspective.
I've got something that I think would unite those countries. It's immature, but farts are funny. Farting is funny. Little whoopee cushion under the German Chancellor's seat. He goes on it. Big old fart noise. Putin straight on the phone. Let's withdraw the troops. Keir Starmer's already making a joke. Sounds like Scholz has already withdrawn his troops. They're laughing. They're having fun. Maybe just bring a load of whoopee cushions into the UN.
The five members of the Security Council, the reason why they're the US, UK, France, Russia, China, is because they all were on the winning side of World War II. And it's like when you make friends on holiday and you realise you've got nothing in common afterwards. And you're like, oh, you know, shall we keep in touch? And it's like, no, not really.
Well, it's also not just that, but then for the next 70 years, you spend a lot of your time trying to kill each other.
There's another quote from Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, describing the UN. He said, we have no power, we have no money, but we have a voice. But I'm in that situation. The UN, I've got no power, I've got no money. I can speak. I'm not getting involved in these things. I think the UN's a bit like Father Christmas. It would be nice if more people believed in it, but like Father Christmas, it's hard to take him seriously without a strong military presence.
We have no money, we have no power, but we have a voice. Sounds like what The Guardian does to try and get you to pay them.
like when the UN ambassador from Slovenia, he's the rotating president, he condemned the poisonous mood at the UN, to which the ambassador from Italy said, maybe we wouldn't be in such a poisonous mood if you'd pitched in your share of the check after the diplomatic dinner, Slovenia, to which the ambassador from Slovenia said, I loathe going Dutch, to which the Dutch ambassador smashed a porcelain windmill covered in clogs and took his shirt off. And then the transcript stopped after that.
Israel has rejected a 21-day ceasefire proposed by the USA and France and endorsed by Team GB. Israel boss Benjamin Netanyahu extended a firm middle finger to the concept of compromise as the year-long game of atrocity tennis continues. I think this delicate, intractable and nuanced situation needs Benjamin Netanyahu, very much like a paddling pool needs a piranha. In other words, not at all, unless you want everyone to have to flee for their lives as quickly as possible. Right, at the end of that round, both teams are back up to A-. We finish this week's show with a special round. A number of biblical prophecies have come true this week. Admittedly, they're prophecies from the recently discovered gospel according to St. Alvin, unearthed by archaeologists last month in a fly-tip sports holdall on the outskirts of Hemel Hempstead. But still, a biblical prophecy is a biblical prophecy. Our panellists have to tell me how this prophecy ends.
Wars will rage, rich men will do ill, words will have no meaning, and then the gasping world will at last receive the second.
The second course at this fancy restaurant. Why do they think we want to spend 45 minutes chit-chatting between not enough entree and too much main?
That's a good answer, but it's not correct. Any other suggestions?
We'll receive the second Neville brother. Phil Neville has been very quiet.
Not the correct answer. Anyone know?
It's a moon.
Yes, we're going to get a second moon.
Second moon to send all the astrology girls crazy. It's a little asteroid, which still seems quite big to me if we're counting it as a moon. It's getting pulled into the Earth's orbit. So for, I think it's like a month and a bit, spare moon.
Yeah, quite exciting though, isn't it?
It is exciting. Say what you want about Starmer, but he said change is going to begin. Last 14 years, one moon. Yeah. 3 months in, he's doubled the moons. Can't say further than that.
Yeah. It's about time as well that I think the moon's had it too good for too long. If you look at, like, Jupiter and Saturn, they've got lots of moons and they've all got individual names. The moon is so arrogant. So, what's your name? The moon. I am the moon. So I think we need to come up with a name for the moon now, because it isn't just the moon. It can't be called the moon too.
Can't be. I can't believe this, like, libertarian moon economics that you're coming up with. Oh, the free market will solve the moon's arrogance problem. It'll get competitive again and start, I don't know, giving women more periods. Like, I don't understand. But you just wait for this rash of werewolves that come in every fortnight.
Oh, God, yeah, there's going to be so many werewolves.
Starmer, you've done it again!
The moon was discovered by NASA's Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System. Why don't we have a first alert system? It's mad that that's the one that's picking asteroids up first, is the last alert. Basically, with enough time to go, oh, God, you're not going to like this.
Right, so that means that Ash and Ian are our winners this week with an A+.
I'm sorry, you're very nice people, but suck on that.
We don't have enough triumphalism from the winning sides on the news quiz. We're bringing that. Thank you very much for listening to the news quiz. I've been Andy Zaltzman. Goodbye. Taking part in the news quiz were Ash Sarkar, Alice Fraser, Ian Smith and Robin Morgan. In the chair was me, Andy Zaltzman, and additional material was written by Christina Riggs, Jade Gebby, Mark Granger and Sharon Wanjohi. The producer was Sam Holmes, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
None of them knew that she'd lived this double life. They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains in minus 40 degrees.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend. helping people was in his blood.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes on BBC Sounds.
Hello, I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump offer two very different views on climate change. One of them will lead the world's greatest producer of fossil fuels and have the power to reshape global climate action. So what would a Harris or Trump presidency mean for the climate crisis? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.